right? So in banking, every conversation that we have has a regulatory implication. So we can't just simply buy lists and start marketing and claim whatever we can because we need permission. There are compliance reviews. We get through these audits, right? There's fair lending operations consideration. There's risk approvals, governance processes. Even simple words like free has to go through a very careful review and make sure that there is no hidden fees and we are trying to be transparent. And that's what made me understand that the responsibility in banking is much greater as compared to any other company because financial decisions have real consequences for customers, right? And you're not just selling something one time. It's not a one-time relationship. It's like an ongoing relationship and you want it to last with your customers and their families for decades.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Product Marketing Life. I'm Sid Kaitan. I'm a staff product marketing manager at Lumaps, and I have the pleasure of being with Pallavi Srivastava. She is the VP product marketing at US Bank. Pallavi, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it feels nice. We're really just an hour apart. So like in terms of distance, so it's like, feels like we're in the same backyard almost.
Kind of, yeah.
Kind of is fair. Yeah, with traffic, who knows? That could even be more.
Yeah, with traffic, it's too much. But I love the city. I used to be in the city, but I mean, yeah, it's a good area for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I like Naperville as well. Awesome. Well, yeah, just to kick things off, I'd love to hear a little bit more about yourself and what do you like to do for fun?
So I moved into the city, Chicago, outside of, now I live in Naperville. And what I do for fun is completely different. So outside of work, I really love to cook. I am an avid cook and baker. So every evening, you'll find me in my kitchen with some amazing background music. And I like to whip something up for my family. It's like a reset for me. A lot of my friends are like, oh my God, I have to cook and it's just too much work. But for me, it just helps me to completely disconnect, be creative and just like start something from scratch. So that's something that I really like to do for fun.
Very cool. And I also understand you're doing a post grad. You're still doing school. You decided to do more school.
Yeah. So I have my master's from Boston University, but in our US Bank, we get opportunity to get more into this banking school kind of an environment where we learn about like banking and executive leadership. So I am currently in year two of a 3-year executive banking program through Wharton. And it's amazing because we get to learn about like leadership, business strategy, P&L, AI leadership. So I genuinely like love learning and I personally believe that, the best leaders remain like lifelong students because it's like so many things that are constantly evolving. So we are never almost there yet. So we always have to like challenge ourselves and like find ways to stay ahead of the change. That's one thing that I do. The other thing that I really like to do after, for fun or beyond my job is like a very active member in the product marketing committee too. So I like to support all of our upcoming product marketers. I mentor high school students, startup innovation competitions. I judge marketing and startup competitions. Just completed judging all these TV awards and all of these mass challenges. So it's kind of like amazing to see what people are doing and what all of these people are coming up with ideas exist. It's like amazing. And just to be a part of it is very, very humbling.
Yeah, that's cool. It's a good transition into my next question, which is what's a non-marketing skill or habit that makes you better at your job?
So for me, I would probably say the most underrated skill is the technical fluency. So I didn't come through PM through a traditional marketing background, right? So I have masters in like data analytics. I worked a lot in operations. I did some design. I did some M&A. I handle like P&L. So this kind of gave me agility to understand like all the different perspectives that I deal with on a day to day, because I'll never forget my first time being a product marketing manager. I was sitting in a meeting where I had to sit with like marketing, sales leaders and product leaders. And to my surprise, everybody was saying the same thing, but in a very different language, you know? So I was like sitting in that meeting and I'm like, I don't think these guys can see the perspective. They all are approaching the same thing where customer is the priority or whatever that message meeting was, but they're all speaking in like different terms. And that experience basically made me realize that how important it is to connect the dots for like everybody involved and being able to speak these different languages with all of my diverse background that I had through either like data analytics or some kind of product background or tech or marketing. It's just been my biggest strength, and it's just opened doors for me that I never expected and helped me build connections that made, I think, every initiative better. So that's one. And then another one that I would like to add is experimenting, which I kind of do in my personal life with food, right? So I think the mindset of like experimentation and curiosity of like, what if we do this and then, you know, continuously figure out new ways to come up at something is amazing, because this test and learn mindset and strategies help us like figure out what resonates with our customers and our internal stakeholders. So those would be the two for me, which I swear by at this point.
Cooking and, well, experimentation and technical fluency. But I was like, that's an interesting combo, cooking and technical fluency as well.
I mean, that's exactly what cooking is, right? Like, you need to learn new techniques. You need to experiment things. You need to probably mix and match, and you don't know what you're going to end up with. So it's all just based on this hypothesis of it might taste like this. So you just have something in mind. So it's very parallel in how we operate in any product launches or product marketing world at this point.
I'm just imagining the AI generated title from Riverside being like, PMM is like cooking.
Perfect, right? Or PMM, what's cooking? Something around those lines. Because that's always what we're doing.
I love it. I love the experimentation. That means also, because of the technical fluency and like translating across all these teams.
Yeah.
That means you know a lot of acronyms.
Yes. All the time. You're not always like searching for lists. And trust me, in big orgs like the one that I work in, there's like a list of acronyms. And I'm not even kidding. The first day when we got acquired and we were just handed a list of acronyms on what does that even mean in the bank. I can just show you that. But it's interesting, because then you just develop so much knowledge across. And then you also have better understanding of a perspective, like why are they coming? Where are they coming from? Why are they so adamant, or why they believe what they believe in, which then gives you a in to influence them and get them together and get them around too. So it's been a blessing.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. You started talking about this, but I'd love to just hear, go through your career journey and like how you got to where you are. As you mentioned as well, everyone has their stumbled into product marketing moment. So
yes, so mine is not unique either. I personally think I discovered PMM before even it was a title or it was actually an existing role, because I always loved helping companies grow and transform. So that's why I kind of helped scale three startups from successful to successful exits. So one was an incubator state startup that I worked in while I was in college with Boston University. The another one was a Series C growth startup that I helped position, and it was successfully acquired. And the third one was the most important one. It was like Bento for Business, for which I moved to Chicago. And it was a fintech which was focused mostly on the spend management aspect of it and business payment. So this was my first time working for fintechs too. But that's where at Bento, I led like the growth, the customer acquisition, learned multiple things, because I started as a data analytics, like marketing analytics person. But then I evolved into different roles of like marketing operations. So I implemented a lot of different tools and technologies. And then I got into a role of director of marketing, then head of marketing. So that's where I kind of learned a whole lot of different things around like fintech and go-to-market strategies. And in 2021, we were acquired by US Bank, and that acquisition basically changed the trajectory of my career, because I became a part of a very big company. And when I joined the bank, I came up from a startup environment, right, where decisions are basically made in the morning and you can shift things in the evening. But when I was suddenly operating in a highly regulated institution with thousands of stakeholders, I went through an identity crisis, because I'm like, speed is so relative here. Like, because when they mean that, oh yeah, we can do it quickly, it's probably going to be like months or even more time than you can think of, right? So that's where I had to learn like how to create an impact in a completely different environment, which led me towards like large scale customer experience transformation projects. One of the major ones that I did was redesigning the business banking experience, which kind of fundamentally changed how we speak to our customers in decades, right? We call them sticky redesigns because this is significantly big on how customers engage with products and digital experiences. And we were planning to build for the future generation too, right? So most of the banking environments are focused towards the present or the generations that have been working with them forever. But how do you cater and tailor towards all of the Gen Zs, Gen Alphas that are coming in? And that's when I think about a year ago, I raised my hand to become the first product marketing team in business banking. And that's what I'm doing today. And it's funny because we sit under product and it's debatable. It's like, do you sit under product or do you sit under marketing? But mine is under product, which makes it easier for us to collaborate and influence things within the product and partner with our marketing partners. So I think that's how I stumbled into becoming a product marketer. But I think I was always a product marketer at heart. I just didn't know what it was called then in the part of this journey.
Yeah. Wow. That was, there's a lot of little tidbits in there that got me curious. One of them very recent. I mean, I also try to talk to a few, budding product marketers that are trying to break in or anything like that. And recently I found more that are from a marketing analytics background that want to go, into product marketing. And to me, sometimes it's a tough shift. Like for you, it makes a lot of sense. Marketing analytics, marketing operations. And now you see a big enough picture to be a director of marketing. But like for someone kind of, I guess, more junior level, would you have any thoughts on how you make a transition just from marketing analytics to product marketing? Or is there a, you know, step gap before you jump into that role?
I personally think that it's possible because all of them are interconnected, right? Even with marketing analytics, either you can just be too focused on what the data is. But if you just shift your perspective a little bit and ask the why, right? Like why and the what? So why is this the way it is? Or what is this data trying to tell me? And what is it trying to solve for? Those type of questions and perspective can definitely help you and get to a product marketing role because that's exactly what we are doing all the time, right? We have insights about our customers. We have insights about our demographic. We have insights our product. Our job is to ask the right questions with our stakeholders so that we are focused on serving our customers, right? So if you even just add this layer and perspective of utilizing those analytic skills into just asking broader questions and taking a step back and see how it kind of fits into the ecosystem, I think the transition could be smooth and great. And I personally think people from analytics background make better product marketers because they have an ability to go deep and at the same time go wide. So you can probably get deeper into very specifics around the archetypes or personas, but you can also get too broad so that you can come up with positioning which speaks to each and every band of it. So my take is just try to understand more perspectives and partner and network with more leaders who can offer and mentor you. And it could be something that you can just get there.
Yeah. That's helpful. The other thing I wanted to ask you is, of course, as you mentioned, going from fintech to like banking company established, like the pace, everything changes. How did you adjust to that pace difference? Because I've kind of felt something similar. I've either gone from startup to, you know, enterprise and then also back. And it is just like a huge step change. And I think like it took me time to actually just like start to figure out how to, I don't know, almost like re-jumble my brain in the way I want it to work. How do you do it?
Yeah. So I think what I did was, as I said, like speed is relative, but I tried to understand like why something takes like 2 days in a startup versus it takes months in a bank, right? So I talked to a lot of seasoned leaders and understand, and a lot of them gave me very good perspective on the stakes that are dramatically different, right? So in banking, every conversation that we have has a regulatory implication. So we can't just simply buy lists and start marketing and claim whatever we can because we need permission. There are compliance reviews. We get through these audits, right? There's fair lending operations consideration. There's risk approvals, governance processes, even simple words like free has to go through a very careful review and make sure that there is no hidden fees and we are trying to be transparent. And I think that's what made me understand that the responsibility in banking is much greater as compared to any other company because financial decisions have real consequences for customers, right? And you're not just selling something one time. It's not a one-time relationship. It's like an ongoing relationship, and you want it to last with your customers and their families for decades. So that's something that made me realize as I talk to people. But then I also did not settle for, oh, it's just going to take us the amount of time it's going to take us, because I always end up asking why. Like, why is it going to take us, I don't know, 15 weeks, right? Can you walk me through the process? More to just understand, like, what am I missing? And even during that journey, I realized that there is a way where you can shorten the 15 weeks timeline to maybe a 10 weeks timeline, because a lot of people that are operating in there are just operating in the status quo of like, oh, this is how this has been handed off to me. There's a lot of tenure in the bag. So you have a lot of people who are working for 30, 35 years, and this is a foolproof method that they've always been working on. But there's also a lot of open-mindedness and innovation. You just have to ask why and just figure out what is something that's absolutely needed from a risk standpoint and what is something that is just, you know, someone's preference. And the minute you're able to decode those, you'll probably try to move faster. Again, not as fast as startups, but again, understanding all the implications and stakes, like how they're different. I think that's how I kind of made peace with it. And now I understand it even better. So yeah, but it took me a good amount of time to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. To code switch, but like strategically. Also, you mentioned, you know, you kind of raised your hand for business banking. I usually find there's a Batman voice finally coming in. I heard, like, I feel like, you know, it's not always as simple as raising your hand, right? You probably had to, or maybe the opportunity rose and you kind of rose up to it. What was that like carving out your own space, you know, literally raising your hand? Was there a need from the business? Did you identify it and kind of, went after it? Like, what did that look like?
Yeah. So, yes, I did raise my hand, but before even, you're perfectly right, like completely right. Like, if it's not valuable, like if someone raises hand, they usually get it in the banking environment because there's so much competition. So before even getting to that, I raised my hands to do a lot of projects, which were like really complicated, really dirty, really sticky. Nobody wanted to do it because it was so different. Nobody wanted to do things that were never done in the bank. Nobody wanted to challenge the status quo. And honestly, I had such amazing leadership. And I always say that I was a blessed one where in terms of my managers, I always got mentors. So I never had like a boss. I always had like mentors and managers who were like challenging me and always like being there for me, but letting me learn all of these skills. So yes, before even I get to that, I kind of proved myself that all of the redesigns that we did in the banking environment, which was never done ever. So we kind of partnered with 15, 20 different teams, stakeholders, built things that were never built in the bank, built in a way which was safe, but it was also not a very standard process. It was not very traditional. So after that success, I think all of my leadership saw that, hey, this is the person who can probably identify gaps, who can probably work in complicated environment, influence folks without burning bridges. So she'd be the perfect for this role. So when this opportunity was created because I think the leadership saw a gap, I was the first candidate who was given the offer, like, hey, do you want to do this? And I'm like, absolutely. I'm jumping on it right now. So yes, but it came with a lot of like trust building and a lot of confidence from the leadership. And to do that, I went through all of these periods of raising hands to do the projects that nobody actually wanted to do.
Sure. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So what does the role look like today? Like, I'm guessing you have some sort of team. Like, how is that structured?
Yeah. So I'm currently, as I said, like vice president for product marketing at US Bank. So my team includes amazing product marketers, project managers, content strategists. So we support a broad portfolio across business banking, including all of our like lending, deposit, merchant, money movement solutions. So at any given point, I think my team is supporting 15 to 20 projects simultaneously. And we are also innovating at the same time. So that's how the role looks right now. Again, it's evolving. So we are still trying to identify what we can do more. But I think it's interesting in itself on how it's evolving right now.
Interesting that you said content strategists as well and project managers. I don't always see that. Usually it's like just a team of different product marketers, right?
Yeah.
What was the intention behind that? Or how did you arrive at that?
Yeah. And I think since we were never a traditional product marketing team, we just wanted to have more diverse folks, right? And depending on what the need is, let's say for like product positioning, instead of just having like a product marketer, we try to get like content strategists because we just don't support the positioning. There's also a sales enablement content piece that my team supports. And then there are, as I said, like at a given time, we are working on like multiple projects. So even with product marketing, I still support a lot of like digital experience projects or some kind of process optimization, or there's a need for us to support our product leaders where we can think of optimizing the different processes too across the board. And that's why we have a mix of project managers, content strategists, and like product marketers, because then the role is diverse enough so we can support all the things that come at us for right now.
Very interesting. If you can share, what are some recent projects or just work you've been really excited about that your team's been able to do?
Yeah, I think the two things that I'm like extremely excited about is, I think you've been hearing AI more than high at this point. So AI. So historically, I think how do we leverage AI for our product marketing is one thing that we are trying to do. And one of the major wins that we had in the banking environment is we were able to test our positioning with our synthetic AI audience tools, right? So earlier, you probably just positioned the projects based on the research, which used to take like a month. And you can just probably hope that it resonates with the customers. And then you have to wait for another 2-3 months to get some feedback. So it was a very reactive approach. But with AI, what I'm seeing is we are very proactive. So we can have all of these synthetic audiences and test our positioning based on our product features to see what's the resonance level with our customers. And usually they're pretty accurate, like 85 to 90% accurate right now, which gives us enough confidence when we are structuring the product positioning or creating the value propositions for the product that, hey, this is going to resonate with the customers. And then we're not shooting in the dark anymore because we are taking informed decisions. So this is something that's been a game changer, at least for my team, in how quickly we are able to take products to the market. Another one is innovation. I think we have a very supportive leadership in the bank who wants the teams to innovate. And as I said, that I always like to raise my hand for all the complex non-traditional stuff. So there are a few things in my portfolio where we are trying to test some type of short form content for banker education or building some kind of prioritization, some attribution signals or retention signals before even they happen. So we are trying to become more disciplined about like these prioritizations and customer impact overall. So all of this sounds simple, but it's extremely transformational for at least my team and how we are able to support our product. So those are the two things I'm like extremely excited about.
Very cool. Now I'm being a little nosy and you can totally say, Sid, I can't answer that for you. But with the synthetic personas and audiences, are you training them based on like past performance in terms of like, hey, these are the types of audiences and how they've reacted to specific materials, marketing, whatever else? Or like, what do you use to train? And once again, if that's your special sauce, you do not have to share this on podcasts.
No. I can definitely give you broad strokes of how we kind of work. So in the bank, we definitely have our identified segments and demographics, right? On like, hey, this is my ideal customer persona. This is the revenue. These are the habits, etc. And then the synthetic audiences we have, it's mostly they leverage the YouGov data that's publicly available for pretty much everyone. And then they probably go in and search the audience size based on those synthetic audiences and then the ICPs that we give them. And that helps us see like how the audience is then reacting or what is the format where they kind of go for their information. So even getting into those information in the bank is like really, really helpful because then we know that, okay, this specific demographic resonates more with this type of content. And this is where they go for the content versus just trying to figure out one size fits all type of messaging, which ultimately is not successful. So that's what we try to leverage the synthetic audience for right now.
Got it. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Very interesting. So when we were talking, I know that we kind of were, I mean, banking environment is so different and I don't always talk to me. In fact, I don't know if I've talked to any product marketers that have been in the banking sector. So, I mean, you kind of laid it out for us, but what makes the brand, the product, the way you do marketing in a bank mm-hmm. so different from fintech and other experiences you've had in the past?
So what I usually say is, I think most importantly in the banking environment, trust is the product, right? And I'll take you to a memory lane. I was sitting at a suburban branch with a banker on a Tuesday. And this is something we do very much as leaders, to just be on the field to understand what's resonating, what's the problem, and what's kind of is happening, to just understand the day-to-day, right? And there was a small business owner. She walked in and she was not there to buy a financial product. Like, she was very concerned because she was getting multiple scam calls and there were like emails, and she wanted to know that her money was like safe with us and, you know, how can we help fight scams. And the banker was really amazing. He reassured her, calmed her down about, like, you know, gave the details about the balances and some tips on how she can be like proactive in fighting scams and whole nine yards. And it was actually at that time that I had this profound realization that right now we are in this world of like AI and super personalization and economic uncertainty, where I don't think features are something that's what set us apart, because with the technology boom that we are in, every other company can replicate your features. All the pricing can be matched, right? And even the customer experience that we have can be imitated to an extent. But something that stays forever is trust. And that's what we focus on when we are working from representing a bank, because trust is like rarest of all. And how does it happen is every day, like, people walk into banks or, you know, in the branches or digitally, because it's not just for like money. They are handling you your personal information. They are handling you your, you know, their dreams and their hopes for future, to buy a house, to get a loan, to start a business. And as we think about evolving these banking products, we just need to make sure that our message is like, customers are buying for peace of mind. So anytime that we design our products or we design our positioning, we want to make sure that the customers feel secure and they are able to like trust us. That's really is the gist of it all. And that's where I was like, our brand is trust, because that's what our customers are investing in. And that trust can be felt every time when they read our product positioning and they're able to understand. They read our descriptions where there's no hidden fees. There's like transparency across the board, where they log in and they're able to see all the information. They can just get in touch with a human pretty quickly, right? So those are the areas and those are the habits that we are trying to focus on as we are, you know, launching products in the bank, which sets us a little bit apart from other companies and fintech. Because, you know, most of the times, as I said, it's a one-time journey, buyer journey. They're buying something from you. But in the banking, we are building relationships, and it could span all the way from one customer to their family to a decade-owned business. So that's what we focus on versus just one-time profit from a customer.
Yeah, it's a really interesting example. And I guess outside of the digital realm, right, you probably only get a few in-person interactions to maintain and retain that trust, right? Because at least for me, I mean, I don't know, I've probably been to a bank like once in the last few times, I guess, like for my business banking, but not often, right? Most of it can just be done from my phone. So, so I'm guessing there is a lean or heavy tilt towards that, especially for the newer generations.
Yes. Yeah. We are trying to balance it out, right? Where we have these brick and mortar branches and then also digital experience. But even inside digital experiences, right, we are trying to make sure that it's easy enough for customers to find what they're looking for. And it's also easy enough to even chat with someone who's a real expert or a relationship manager versus trying to chat with an AI bot, right? I think that's where the connection happens, even for digital first customers. So even like focusing on channels and strategies, and how do you make sure that they all are like working at tandem, whether for a digital audience or for an existing audience, is something that we always keep in mind and keep at the center as we are designing our strategies.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're mentioning how there's like, you know, 15 to 20 products at any time that are being worked on. I mean, we have this issue ourselves, like as a not small, but mid-sized SaaS company. It's like, you know, when a customer asks about a problem, they're not saying, hey, this is about the AI workflow problem. They're just saying, this is a problem. And it might include five different products that are somehow stitched together. How do you deal with that when there's so many different products, but at the end of the day, like, their experience is just with US Bank?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge each and every PMM face, irrespective of the industry, I would want to say. And every product owner that we work with, they believe that their launch is most important and their product is most beneficial, which is not wrong, because if you put your heart and soul into something like that, you definitely want to have it priority. But what we try is we try to glue it all together and ask our product leaders questions of like, hey, if I'm a customer, what does one US bank even mean for me, right? And even giving them these ideas and some questions around like, think about it from a customer lifecycle standpoint. Maybe your product is fit for a day 30 in that customer journey versus a day one, right? So even asking those questions and laying things out of like, when a customer comes in, like, what do they need to hear on day one versus what should we send them on day 30 and after, or what problem they're trying to solve like right now versus, you know, what your solution can offer to them. I think that's what helps us, and laying these things out clearly to our product leaders help them too, because then they can see that, oh, it's not that my product is not important. It's important enough, but not just like right now. So we are not saying no, we are just saying not now. And that's something that has resonated with a lot of product leaders. And it's also beneficial for the customers, because to your point, like, customers don't know if it's coming from one team or another team. All they see is one US bank. So how do we probably give them that message across the board is important.
Yeah, I like that. The moment matters so much. You know, if you give someone the most complex AI product you have when they just signed a deal, right? It's like kind of a weird balance. So you have to arrive in context. I like that a lot. You know, drawing a line through the customer experience, really thinking through where does this fit in their life cycle. This was my favorite thing when we had originally talked, which is, you know, I think people have this perception, right, that banks are, you know, a little rigid and have to move slow. But a small basis point shift from the Fed could kind of just completely derail whatever you had planned. How do you stay agile? What does that look like? I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah. And I think people have this misconception that bank is not agile. I think we, as you said, like, we are most impacted by all the economic factors. And that's where like banking teaches us humility, to your point. Like, a Federal Reserve can make a decision tomorrow that change customer behavior immediately, right? So that's where we try to build for proactiveness, right? We focus on proactiveness because we can't control the variables, but what we can control is figure out like what customers need or might need during those moments, which kind of is challenging for us, because it then challenges us to, it forces us to think creatively and proactively. So in an environment where market conditions and rates and regulatory requirements are like changing rapidly, we just can't like simply react. We have to anticipate. And that's where we are so much into even educations. We have these forums. We have these, you know, analyst calls where we sit on to even just anticipate and predict what could happen. And that means that we just don't get a multiple chance to come up with our product positioning. So anytime we build our positioning strategies, we need to be make sure that yes, they're speaking to the customers, but they're broad enough that they can anticipate any of those changes, right? We are building for scalable messaging. We are building off our offer repositories, right? So anytime there's a Fed rate change, we don't have to go through all of these things, all of the processes. Again, we build like a risk approved ready, placeholder message and placeholder offer ready, which can just be deployed across the board. So these type of things just force us to be more proactive, look at more predictive analysis, and be just on our toes all the time and just read through things. I think that's, and we are pretty agile because building all of these repositories and going to all of these symposiums, it gives us a fair amount of idea on like what's next. So we are always building for what's next, and we are always incorporating those strategies in our in the way we try to go to market.
Very interesting. This conversation has been amazing. I learned a lot. I'm sure anyone who's listening will have learned a lot. I like to end episodes with a few core questions, if you'd humor me. The first is, yes, product marketing is blank. Can you fill in the blank?
Yes. So I thought about it a lot, and thanks for the heads up though. So for me, I think product marketing is invitation to join the journey. And I'll explain more, because as product marketers, we take products from why should I care about it, to like, oh, I really love it. So it is like welcoming people into a product story, showing them where they fit and why it basically matters, because ultimately we want to turn these so-called engaged prospects into passionate advocates of our product. So for me, I think it's just a skill to invite someone into a product's journey.
I really like that. It just makes me realize, like, the best demos, that's what they do, right? You're actually inside the product. Yeah. You're like, oh, wow, this is for me. I get it now. Yeah. Versus like, here's our newest feature.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that works well too, because you're then inviting me to be a part. I have a shared goal, right? You are trying to learn more about me. You're trying to show what you can solve for me. And oftentimes the customers don't even know they have a problem and a solution exists for it, right? So even, inviting them at any stage, whether they're prospects, existing customers, or you can just make them a multi-product customer. There's just so much opportunity into this invitation versus just layering about the feature, because ultimately the message is like, what's in it for me, right? And if you're trying to get to that from a customer standpoint, you'll always end up getting engaged customers versus if you're just trying to layer in the feature and just be like, see what I can do, see what I can do. You probably won't be able to engage those folks. So that's how I think about product marketing right now. And it always is evolving, but that's a journey.
I love it. I feel like it consolidates a lot of really important concepts. So I enjoyed that. And it's unique. So final question, how can people learn more about all the amazing work you and your team are doing, and follow along your journey.
Yeah, I think LinkedIn would be a good one. I have my phases. Some days I'm very active, others you won't find me there, but I'm very avid contributor to like the Product Marketing Alliance community. So I do post some write-ups in the Product Marketing Alliance. You can probably also find me on the ADP list. I try to like mentor and support like startups. But yes, like if you want to connect, just shoot me a text on LinkedIn. I write few articles on Medium too about product marketing here and there. So yeah, but LinkedIn would be the best way to connect. And I always love to just have a good coffee and chat anytime. It's amazing to network and learn more. So that's how people can just follow me and follow my journey.
Sounds good. Amazing. Thank you so much, Balavi.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Sid. This has been amazing. I cannot believe it's already 30 minutes. Like, it's just been such an interesting conversation.
Hey, likewise. Awesome.
Right, thank
you. Well, we'll see you soon.
Bye. Yeah.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again, and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.